Fresh Air Comedy Week continues with Joan Rivers. Like many comics of the 50s and 60s, she reached a national audience through The Ed Sullivan Show.
From upstairs to the downstairs, our daffy little friend, Joan Rivers.
I almost didn't come out tonight because I'm backstage shortening my skirt. And every time I shorten my skirt, you know, you have to shorten it again because of the dumb styles. I don't know if you're aware of it, but do you know that skirts are going up, which is great if you're tall and thin. But if you're short and squat like me, you can just forget it, you know that. They're going up, do you know they're going up now 10 inches above the knee? Did you read that? 10 inches above the knee? What if you're short? What if you don't have 10 inches? What are you supposed to do? I'll tell you something, the way the styles are today, I'm glad I'm married, because if I was single, I could never get married looking like this, you know? And I feel sorry for any single girl today. The styles and the whole society is not for single girls, you know that. Single men, yes. A man, he's single, he's so lucky. A boy on a date, all he has to be is clean and able to pick up the check, he's a winner, you know that. Or a man can call up anybody in the whole world, you know that? Hello, I saw your name in the locker room, I thought I'd give you a quick call. Excuse me. A girl can't call. Girl, you have to wait for the phone to ring, right? And when you finally go on the date, the girl has to be well-dressed, the face has to look nice, the hair has to be in shape. The girl has to be the one that's bright and pretty, intelligent, a good sport. Howard Johnson's again, hooray, hooray. Excuse me. A girl, you're 30 years old, you're not married, you're an old maid. A man, he's 90 years old, he's not married, he's a catch. It's a whole different thing. Isn't that so? Yes, yes. It kills me. We have an extra man. Bring him along. He's 98. Bring him. He's dead. Bring him. We'll prop him. Just bring him.
Joan Rivers recorded in 1967. I spoke with Joan Rivers in 1991 after the publication of her autobiography, which covered everything from how she writes jokes to how she survived the most difficult period of her life. After her husband Edgar's suicide, Rivers was devastated. It took 5 months before she went back on stage. She told me what it was like that first night back on stage after Edgar's death, when she felt ready to be funny again, but the audience was still uncomfortable.
It was very difficult. They didn't know. I was hanging over the audience. It was hanging up. Her husband killed himself. She was fired from the Fox network. She's finished. She's over. She's not funny. I really think they came to look. And tremendous tension. And I was very nervous. And I figured, you might as well go. It was the way I've handled my whole life. Go out and just talk about it from the beginning. And instead of waiting till the end to talk about it, I walked out and talked about it at the start and made them laugh. And that cleared the air. And I thought to myself, oh, thank you, God, I can continue as a comedian.
So what kinds of things did you say about Edgar or the suicide in your act?
Well, you have to deal with it. I mean, these people were not stupid. I said, my husband killed himself, as you all know. And he asked to be cremated and have his ashes sprinkled in Neiman Marcus because then he knew I would visit him every day. And they laughed. And that was the only reference I made to it. And it was just fine. It was just enough.
Now, you say that your audience didn't want you to be sexual when you went back to comedy.
No.
What kinds of jokes weren't going over?
I'm not a sexual person, certainly on stage. And they loved hearing about my sex life when I was married. They didn't want to see a 52-year-old woman at that point talking about dating and... They just didn't want to hear it. And there was one joke, which is so indicative. I had written this joke saying, I don't think I'm good in bed. I said to a man last night, why don't you call out my name while we're making love? And he said, I don't want to wake you up. And that got such a gasp from the audience. So I changed the joke to saying, I don't think I was good in bed when I was married. I once said to my husband, why don't you call out my name while we're making love? And he said, I don't want to wake you up. And it got a big response. And I realized right then and there they didn't want to hear dating jokes or any kind of any innuendo about sex for me currently. Not that there was any, but you know, you write these jokes. But you write these jokes. You know, you come up, well, I'll do a whole thing on going out with a man. He tries to make out with me. You know, something like that. Or I try to make out with him. And I realized they didn't want to hear that from me.
Now, so much of your material over the years has been about how you look, you know, about feeling unattractive, about being too heavy, about not being sexy. Yet for years, your onstage look has been positively glamorous. Yeah. You have gorgeous clothes. You're incredibly thin. You've gone through plastic surgery. You look terrific. So does it ever feel like the material is out of sync with who you really are, who you've really become?
No. Everybody tries to look. I don't know, one person listening out there gets up in the morning and says, I think I'm going to pick the ugliest outfit and I'm going to try to look really unattractive today. We all try to look the best we can, and I've just done the best I can with this package, you know? But I diet all the time, and I try to look good, and the wrinkles are coming on, and no, I don't look hot at all. I look good for what I started out as, but that's it. So it doesn't, and they look at me on stage, and they go, yeah, she's right, she is a pig. There's no question about that.
So your self-image is still in keeping with the kinds of jokes you tell about
yourself? Oh, yes. Oh, absolutely.
You still tell jokes about being heavy?
I get on a scale twice a day, and I am still heavy. I've seen myself in a bathing suit. This is not thin, you know, skinny mini over here. My thighs, a family of 18 could live on them for a year if you put ketchup on them.
I see. I think that's a very funny joke, but I look at you and I think, you know, you're seeing somebody different in the mirror than who you really are.
I hope so. I hope so. Because what I see in the mirror, boy, I don't like.
Well, why did being overweight and feeling, that you weren't attractive have such a profound effect on you?
Well, I think it has a profound effect on everybody. When they write in your yearbook, here comes fat, fat, the water rat. You don't forget that. That ruins your yearbook. You don't forget it when you come down the stairs at college and a blind date says out loud to the guy standing next to him, why didn't you tell me? These are things that scar you very, very deeply. And stay that way, you know, that's it.
How did you feel about the recent TV Guide cover story on celebrity plastic surgery? And the cover had a before and after picture of you on it.
I don't get plastic surgery. Celebrities will tell you they were raped by their mothers, they were beaten, incest. I mean, they will tell you the most. One comedian, you know, would say her parents took excrement and put it all over her, you know? And you say to them, did you have a facelift? What, me? Never. I don't know. And everybody has done it. And I just think people should, see, tell the truth. What is so terrible to say, I want to look better, and I had my nose thinned. I want to look better, and yes. I mean, Jane Fonda, who was into exercise, as we all know, has had the facelift, has had the boobs done, has had God knows what. And that's fine. Why are we playing this game? I don't get it. So I was delighted to come out and say to my audience, I'm going in now because my eyes look like hell, and I'm getting a really bad under-the-chin look. Delighted to do it.
I'll tell you the problem I have with plastic surgery, and tell me what you think of it. I think that we're just creating this just impossible ideal. And I think of, like, the young Joan Rivers who was uncomfortable with how she looked. Imagine if she felt she had to live up to the kind of body and face that could only be created by surgeons.
Let me just tell you something, and it's very nice to say, and I'm already bored to death. Let me just tell you something. We're in a business where you have to look good.
Yeah.
Where they fire people because they're getting old. And it's very easy to say, let's grow old. The public doesn't want to see an old puss giving the news, and you know it, and talk to Jane Pauley at 40.
So you feel that you really have no choice.
There is no choice in our business. There is no choice. We didn't want to see Elizabeth Taylor jowly and horrible. We're thrilled to see her looking good again. We're thrilled to see Sophia Loren looking beautiful. I mean, who are we kidding?
My guest is Joan Rivers. More after a break. This is Fresh Air. Back to our 1991 interview with Joan Rivers. I was interested to read about the working method that you developed early on for writing your jokes. You said that you can't just sit down and write jokes. Yeah. You needed to, like, work off somebody. So you used to have Rodney Dangerfield come over.
Yes, we were all very young in those days.
So tell me how you would work together, what the process was like.
Process is just, I come out of Second City, which is all you know, verbal. And we would sit and just start saying, okay, answering machine. Let's do jokes on answering machines. Well, my answering machine, I'm so boring, my answering machine doesn't even pick up. No, that's not good enough. Okay, let's do an answering machine. Answering. All right, how about, I'm so boring, my answering machine put me on hold. Good. I mean, you just keep, the process is you just bounce on one another. Do you find something you like?
So Rodney Dangerfield was somebody good to bounce off of.
Wonderful. He was wonderful. Another man named Marshall Brickman, who wrote all the early Woody Allen movies with Woody, who's now writing himself and directing himself. Marshall was a joy, because you would come in and sit and laugh till you found something good.
Have you ever had people writing for you?
Oh, of course. And anyone out there that thinks they're funny, please send me some jokes. I pay $10 for every joke that I use.
Gee, that's not a lot.
It is when I buy the joke and paper it before I've even tested it. I think out of 100...
Oh, you mean like if I sent like you any lousy old thing, you'd pay
$10. They send me like a bunch of jokes. I'll say, oh, let me think, I'll try this one. I think I'll try 4. So I'll send them a check for $40. Then I take those 4 jokes and try them out. And if you're lucky, one joke out of 15 works. One joke out of 20 works. One joke out of 100 really works. It's very hard. Everyone sees different ideas of what is funny. And when I write jokes myself and they don't work, it's very hard for me because I think, but that's funny. Why aren't you laughing?
When you were subbing for Carson, did his writers write any of your opening monologues?
No, because his writers would, and they're right, and they were right, would give me the jokes they didn't want to give Johnny, which means Johnny got the good jokes. Johnny was paying them. If you write a brilliant joke, who are you going to give it to?
Right.
The guy that's paying you or the girl that comes in once a week who has nothing to do with your life or your future? So they didn't give me good jokes. So I would come in with my own.
Well, also, there's something so much, like from a woman's point of view about your jokes. I'm sure all of us writers, or certainly at least most of them, were men.
And again, the funniest jokes, of course, come from me. Mm-hmm. It truly ends up what I think is funny. My perception of something always is the strongest in my act.
When you started to perform, did you look up to the few women who were in the field, like Phyllis Diller, Toadie Field, Selma Diamond?
No. I never think in terms of comedy as male or female-oriented. I looked at Lenny Bruce because he told the truth. Mm-hmm. He told the truth. And as a very impressionable young woman then right out of college, the first time I saw him, I went, but he's saying what I'm thinking. Maybe not with those words, because in those days you just didn't say the words that he said. But he's saying what I'm thinking, and that's what I want to say on stage.
What was your early material like before you'd really kind of developed the Joan Rivers persona?
Very shocking in those days. I played my first record, which really was my successful record for 1966, called Mr. Phyllis and Other Stories, which was about my hairdresser. And I played it for Melissa, and the record in those days was like, did you hear what this girl has in a record? I mean, you know, they didn't even know my name at that point. And my daughter and I said, isn't that sweet? In 1966, to say you were having an affair with a married man, and while he was engaged to me, his wife became pregnant, which is one of my jokes. So I don't think, my joke was, while he became engaged to me, his wife became pregnant, so I don't think he's sincere, was my joke. This shocked audiences. And my daughter and I said, isn't that cute? So what was shocking then is not shocking now. But I was always shocking within the framework of the time period.
When you started off, it was before you were married to Edgar. You'd been married once before. So did you have a guy in your life to do jokes about? You know, did you have like a name to use?
I had a
person.
I was having this affair with this college professor from Columbia who indeed was married at the time, separated but nonetheless married. And so I used that, and I used all the jokes which were true about dating. And my mother was crazy. She had 2 of us that weren't moving, as the expression goes. And I talked about that a lot. And my sister graduated from Columbia Law School at 21, was very pretty and nothing. And my mother would just, no matter what happened, you know, and I talked about in the act, if you saw an accident, my mother would say, that means a wedding. You know, she was always looking for, a man would be decapitated, the head would roll to my mother's feet, my mother would go, this means a wedding, this means a good. So that's what I talk. I always talk from truth. You know, I think that's very important for your act, that they know, even though there's a joke there, that you really mean what you're saying.
Joan Rivers recorded in 1991.